The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, some of you know that starting in January, I did a series of talks on mindfulness, the practice of mindfulness. And I somehow thought of just continuing in that theme a little bit more with maybe as the appendix to the series or something. And I thought this evening to talk about the difference between mindfulness and concentration. It's something that many people wonder about. Sometimes they're presented as two different meditation practices, and sometimes they're presented as being complementary aspects of the same meditation. And sometimes it's said that in order to do concentration practices, you have to have a modicum of mindfulness to keep you on track. And if you want to do mindfulness practices, you need to have a modicum of concentration to keep you on track, to keep you engaged. And so there are sometimes two schools of practice, the concentration practices and the mindfulness practices. And there's also the school that the two can be integrated and not be seen as two distinct practices, but two harmonious, mutually supportive aspects of a single meditation practice. And if you go back to the time of the Buddha, it seems that, depending how you interpret the text, but it seems that pretty clearly to me that he didn't separate out mindfulness and concentration so much as two separate practices, but saw them as working together, sometimes sometimes at the same time, sometimes in a relay system, that you would do mindfulness, then do concentration, mindfulness would occur, kind of back and forth. And they're both quite wonderful, mindfulness and concentration, as meditation can be for some people. And one of the primary characteristics or the entryway to both concentration practices and mindfulness practice is being in the present moment. And this is so important that there's a little cliche that someone made up, a little slogan. And that is that the fastest way to get from, in meditation, the fastest way to get from A to B is to be fully at A. So any attempts to get anywhere, you should put aside when you're doing a practice and just really enter this moment fully. And this is one of the reasons why meditation can be, for some people, very satisfying, because it can be an intimate connection to the present moment. It can be a settled connection to the present moment. I like to think of feeling at home here in the present moment. Some people, a sense of peace. Some people, it's a sense of connectedness, not to themselves, but to the world itself, the world around, connected to the heart and the world that's connected to the heart. There's a lot of wonderful qualities, sometimes contemplative qualities that can come with meditation practice that are quite heartwarming. And so to have the ability to sit down and let the concerns of daily life fall aside and just feel content and happy and settled here, as if just being here is enough in itself, being fully here at A, is a wonderful thing to have. And it's a kind of it refreshes people. It also provides people with a different perspective for when they come out of meditation, when they go about their life. That's very different than if they're always churning and busy and, you know, worked up. I've told this story sometimes. It's not exactly meditation, but when I was living in the monastery for a while, spent a year working in the kitchen, monastery kitchen. And serving lunch was always a challenge, not only because it was cooking for a lot of people, but it was also, it had to be ready punctually at a certain minute. It couldn't be off, because the whole monastery, the choreograph of the monastery depended on it. It's Zen monastery where everything is choreographed. And so it was a big deal to get lunch out sometimes. And then I forget exactly how soon before lunch, but my memory was maybe it was somewhere between 15 and 30 minutes before lunchtime, maybe less, maybe 10 minutes, everyone had to stop in the kitchen, all the cooks had to stop, and go to the little altar where the little Buddha was stationed. And we had to chant. I think it was the Heart Sutra. And we have to do this kind of chant. And it was like, what? You know, we're trying to get the food out. And, we don't have much time. We have to kind of keep working. We can't stop. But the rule was, no matter what, you had to stop. So I would stop, and we would stop, and we would chant. And we always had more time afterwards. It was always, we were more calm, more settled. It was like always a wonderful thing to do, to somehow step out of the busy mind, the active mind. The mind is full of ideas of what should be. The mind that creates time and pressure and all kinds of things. And to step out of that and be refreshed and come back into the world with a fresh eye. So to come to really, you know, the chanting helped me at least to be really at A, be here. And then the rest of the cooking inevitably became a lot easier. So meditation practice, concentration and mindfulness is part of the path to this kind of intimacy, to hear, to be present. And rather than saying something about the standard, there's some of the standard things that can be said about the difference between mindfulness and concentration. I want to say a few words first and then give you some the similes that the Buddha provided for these two kinds of practices, these two states of mind, two activities of mind. Before the similes, the verbs, the activities associated with concentration and the activity associated with mindfulness are different. The words that are most commonly associated with concentration practice are sometimes the verb entering into and abiding in certain states of concentration. But also, in doing the practice of concentration, it's very common for the Buddha to talk about using language of touching, verbs of touching. You touch things, you touch your body, you're connected. So it's very intimate, the concentration. Whereas mindfulness can also be equally intimate, but we use a different kind of metaphor, a different organ of perception for mindfulness. And that is seeing. The activity of mindfulness is seeing. So one is touching and the other is seeing. The location for concentration practice is the body. And again, with this touching as a physical thing, and a lot about being concentrated is really being in the body, being connected. People associate concentration with a mental focus and being one pointed with the mind, like a laser focus. And to give too much priority to the mind when we practice concentration tends to make people lopsided. To have an integrated sense of deep samadhi, concentration, we want to be centered and connected to our body. And the location for mindfulness practice is more the mind. And that's where the knowing, the recognition, the mindfulness is a little more of a more has a mental location or association than concentration. And so you can well imagine that if you want to have an integrated practice where you're whole, that you want to have both your body and your mind involved and connected. And so this idea of being concentration and mindfulness working hand in hand is an important idea. The experience of doing concentration practice is different than the kind of the experience that comes from the mindfulness part of it. The experience of concentration is one of unity or merging or feeling kind of like the boundaries fall away, a feeling of expansiveness. The experience of mindfulness is a sense of independence, becoming increasingly independent from what is known. So with concentration, it's more merging with what is, and concentration is more of a, in the good senses of the term, a separation from what is, a sense of independence from what is. So in Zen monasteries in particular, there's often a lot of emphasis on concentration. And so to really become one with the activity, if you're sweeping the courtyard, just sweep and become one with the sweeping. If you're chopping vegetables, just be one with the chopping. Just really give yourself over to the activity as if that's the full activity you're doing. With mindfulness, there's also kind of a full presence for what you're doing. But isn't that you're not that you're merging with experience to become one with it, but you're really present fully, and there's an intimacy, but there's a clear sense of the knowing is free, independent, distinct from what is known. And so this is quite a wonderful thing. But again, the integration of these two is very helpful, because the knowing by itself can lead to a kind of disassociation, can lead to some a little bit too much in the head. And it's very easy to be fooled by our own minds, and to spend too much time in the mind knowing or being aware, it's easy to have blinders on, not see the full picture. And so to be in the body, the body is kind of, the body has its own intelligence. The body has its whole working. It's not a lump of flesh, right? There's a lot that goes on, our emotions, our feelings, our nerves, our impulses, our reactions. A lot happens in our body. So to have these two work together, being connected to our body and being connected to our mind, having this intimacy through the body and having this clarity and independence of the mind, makes for a very nice combination. And then concentration practice is strongly connected to relaxation, becoming calm. Mindfulness practice is associated with clarity, becoming clear, really seeing clearly what's there. It helps a lot to be relaxed in order to see clearly. And if you see clearly, that helps you to relax. So these go hand in hand. You can't separate them too far. But there are these distinctions that are made. So then the similes of these two practices. As concentration practice deepens, as the states of concentration arise, and we're developing concentration, the first simile the Buddha used was that of a bath master or bath attendant. You still have some places in the world where you have public baths, and there's people there who are attendants to those baths, and they take care of it and provide soap. Sometimes they massage you and do different things. And so in the ancient world it was the same way. And so the bath attendant would make the soap. And apparently in ancient India, one way of making soap was they had some kind of powder and dry powder, and they would take it in a bowl and they would sprinkle water into it. Just like you would pour a little bit of water in flour to make a dough. And then the bath attendant would work the powder, knead the powder, until the whole powder was saturated with water. Not too much, not soaking in water, but just saturated with water. But you have to work the powder, you have to work the dough to get it all moist and everything. And so in the same way, when we're developing concentration, there is a working of the practice. We're kind of staying with our breath, we're staying present for an experience, we're coming back to our body. And there's a sense that the mind is engaged or focused on coming, staying involved. And it isn't like you can't just exactly hold your mind fixed on the breath or anything. The idea of holding the mind in a fixed way too early, it doesn't work so well. But kind of it's more massaging, working the mind, relaxing, coming back, staying there. And then as we start getting the feedback, the biofeedback system, that we're starting to get focused and settled, there's a variety of nice experiences that begin happening. Feel lighter, easier, more relaxed. There can be a sense of well-being that arises. And then that becomes this feedback thing, massaging, working that, kind of staying there, coming back, staying with it, staying present. The mind comes off, stay, come back. Work that breath, stay with the breath, massage it. As these good feelings start arising, it's kind of like you're allowing them, opening to them, feeling them in your body. And one of the reasons why the body is so important for concentration practice is a lot of the good feelings of relaxation and well-being that can come from concentration arises up into from the body. So they're kind of the images that are working. For mindfulness practice, the kind of maybe a little bit comparable simile that's used is that of a surgeon who, before doing the surgery, is taking his or her hands and kind of probing around in the skin, you know, wherever they're going to cut, kind of feeling what's there, getting really familiar. Because you probably want your surgeon to, you know, really know what they're going to cut into, so they know exactly how to do it, not too much, not too little. So the idea is probing. So the idea is not massaging, but using your hands to get information, to discover what's there, to get to know it better. Whereas in concentration practice, you're not really trying to get to know the experience better. You're trying to get really settled and relaxed, or settled and intimate with the experience. And there doesn't have to be so much clarity for that purpose. So the idea of a surgeon probing, looking. Another simile similar is that of a cow herder who is watching the cows as the cows are wandering around the fields, the other people's fields, when the crops are still growing. And the cow herder has to be very careful to keep the cows on the edge of the fields and not going into the fields, so they only eat the other farmer's plants. So the cow herder has to be right near the cows, keeping a close eye on them, pushing them away from the farmer's plants, and they're just kind of. And sometimes that's what we do with mindfulness. We have to stay very present. We have to watch our mind. And notice when the mind wanders off to eat other people's plants, other people's stuff, you know, wander off into other people's pastures and come back to our pasture here. So you remind yourself, here's your pasture. And literally the Buddha used the language pasture for the domain in which we're doing our mindfulness practice. And I love this idea, this simile, that what we're doing is connecting to our own pasture. So we get nourished by it, we can feed on it, and then grow, develop ourselves with it. So stay away from, when you meditate, stay away with other people's pastures. You know, leave them alone, stay right here. And so it has to be a little bit of work to do that sometimes. Mind wanders off, we come back, mind coming back. As we settle in further, the simile for concentration practice is that of upwelling feelings of well-being, feelings of contentment or happiness, or just feel kind of start bubbling up from the inside. And so the simile for that is that of a lake, that maybe a mountain lake, where there's no rain and there's no rivers coming in feeding this lake. And so the only way that it gets refreshed with new water is that there's an underground spring in the bottom of the lake, and the water is coming up, the refreshing cool water is coming up out of the spring and then spreading up throughout the whole lake. And the idea of there not being any rain or rivers coming in from outside is that as we get more and more settled, we're not being affected by the world around us. The world around us is not feeding us or not influencing our lake. So we hear a sound, and the sound doesn't affect us. We don't get picked up. We don't start thinking about, should we go on the train? What train should we take? Which train was that? We should not have so many trains. IMC shouldn't be near train tracks. And so if you do that, then you know, you're being fed by outside rivers, kind of way. You're involved in the sounds of come into your meditation. It isn't that you have to cut off the sounds, but that's not what you want to be affecting what the mind is involved in. And you want to let it all kind of relax and settle so you're connected here, and this amazing capacity we have to have upwelling feelings of contentment and happiness for no good reason. It's so great to become happy for no reason. In a sense, no external reason. You know, you haven't won the lottery, you haven't gotten a promotion, or, you know, it's not because good things are happening to you in the world. It's just because you're sitting there and your mind is no longer caught up in concerns, and you're settled enough in A, here, in your pasture, and this feeling of this well-being has room to arise. The simile for mindfulness that kind of correlates to this is that of a gatekeeper. In the ancient world, the time of the Buddha, they had these cities where they had gates, walls all the way around. And so maybe there was one gate to get into the town, and there would be a gatekeeper. And the gatekeeper would watch everyone who comes and goes, And the gatekeeper would stay relaxed, stay present, wouldn't go anywhere. But as the people came who shouldn't be in town, came to the gate, said, no, you can't come in. And the people who should come in said, you can come in. And let people come and go and have some choice about it. And then occasionally there'd be a message for the monarch, and the gatekeeper would arrange for the message to go be, you know, conveyed to the monarch. And so in the same way, when we sit and are starting to get more settled in meditation practice, it's not a matter of bringing our mind back over and over again, but we have enough, we're so present and still that kind of like the mind becomes a gate, we're like a gatekeeper, and we can decide, I'm not going to go there. I'm not going to think about that. I'm not going to go off there. I'm not going to let that in. I don't have to get involved. I'll leave it alone. Oh, that's a good thing. I'll let that come in. And then something happens that seems important to take into account, and so the message is sent to the monarch, which in this case would be you, or your mind, you know, whatever's in charge there. Maybe it has to kind of focus, make a choice about how to meditate or how to shift things. So the gatekeeper. The next kind of simile for concentration is that of multicolored lotus flowers. So lotuses have different colors, and so the flowers. So there's all these different colored lotuses, flowers, floating in a lake that's completely still. So completely still, quiet, clear lake, pure lake. And so, and these apparently, I don't, the way this simile is presented, a lot of these lotus flowers are under the water. And so every part of the flower is touched by the water. But you can see really clearly, and it's really, the temperature is comfortable, everything is so nice and pure about the water. And they're just floating there without moving, and just feeling the nourishment and support of the refreshing water. So as the mind gets more and more concentrated and settled, and we're more easy to be here, there's no tendency to wander off, and we get calmer, then the upwelling feeling of contentment and happiness that was going on quiets down and becomes the whole heart, the mind, the body becomes calmer and calmer. And as we do that, there's also a greater clarity. And we see more clearly, we feel more clearly, and more connected. And the experiences we have start shining or become colorful or beautiful like a flower. And a little bit people's view of themselves and the world can change in the deeper realms of concentration and mindfulness, because the usual negative self-talk that many people carry around with them quiets down and doesn't operate. And so that lens of seeing our experience of through desires and hate and criticism and, you know, all, quiets down, and the mind becomes kind of not inclined to look at the, you know, that the glass is half empty. And what happens is that the our experiences start kind of shining and seeing everything we experience. We hear something, we see something, it just kind of feels beautiful and nice. We feel a sensation in the body, just beautiful, it's nice. We feel the movement of the breath. Even a thought can arise. Oh, just, wow, it's a thought. But you're not inclined to follow the thought, get involved in the thought. You don't have to do anything about the thought because you're not going to think it any further. It's just a thought. So it's kind of a sense of beauty. And there are sometimes, some people have that experience of coming out of meditation and just like, wow, you know, I'll look at the glass. You know, just like, wow. And then nice. It's kind of like some people maybe waking up from a nap in the afternoon and you feel content laying there and you don't really want to get up yet, and just looking at the dust coming, you know, in the sunlight, you know, you say, wow, you know, looking at that, oh, so nice. Look, it's so beautiful. You know, just kind of sparkles and it floats and you follow little dust particles and it's so nice. And you don't, you're not inclined to think that that's probably someone's skin that's floating around, and you're probably going to inhale it, and who knows where that skin has been, and you know, it's a wonderful world we live in. You know, just wow, it's so nice. So there's a kind of sense of wonder that can happen. And so this idea of these multicolored lotus flowers floating in this, all the flowers are touched by the water. Now the water in these similes has a lot to do with kind of a simile of the goodness or the subtleness or the well-being or the purity or the clarity of mind that can come with concentration practice. And so I think in some schools of psychoanalysis, water is often a symbolism for a consciousness. So this water is kind of used for the simile of being settled, connected, concentrated. The comparable simile for mindfulness is back to the cowherder. Remember the first simile of the cowherder? The cowherder was tending the cows while the farmer's plants were still growing. The fields were still had the... Now, the fields have been harvested. And so there's no worry about where the cows go because they can go into the fields and eat the stubble. It's no problem. The farmers don't mind. And so now the cowherder, rather than staying really close to the cows and moving them and keeping them off the forbidden plants, can just lay down and lean against a nice tree in the shade and just keep kind of panoramic view of where the cows are, be relaxed, at ease, comfortable, and just kind of watch and make sure they don't wander off too much or make sure that no one steals it. Or I don't know what they have to do, but just kind of just generally keep an eye out. But there's nothing to worry about particularly. And they don't have to be right on top of it, kind of taking care of it. So as we get more concentrated, more settled, more here in the present moment, and the mind is not so activated by thinking, by wanting to think, by being preoccupied, being concerned about things, being interested in the thoughts so much, we don't have to do much work to stay present. It just kind of becomes natural, second nature, to stay present and aware. And we can just kind of, we have to stay present and aware, but it's more like we can relax and settle back and kind of have a panoramic view of everything. And things arise and they pass and we watch and we know what's there. And we're awake enough, clear enough, if there's something that needs our attention, we can focus on it. But nothing's really needed for us because it's all safe. It's safe for our cows to wander. I don't know what the cows stand for, but maybe you can think about what your cows are. Now, the next simile for concentration is that of a person who, I think you have to, if I think of this as ancient India, India is mostly a very hot country, and sometimes extremely so. So in this image, someone has gone to a really cool, refreshing, nourishing lake and gotten really cooled down and cleaned and, you know, use all that bath powder that they had and really soaked in the lake for a while and just felt really nourished and support cleansed. And I don't know if you've ever been taking a shower or a bath and just felt afterwards that you were kind of pure for a little while, a purified or sense of purity or real sense of cleanliness that feels so good. So come out of the pond that way, lake, and then someone's waiting for you maybe, or you have sitting there waiting for you, a completely clean, spotless, maybe new, almost new, white, soft, Benares silk, maybe really soft cotton, you know, sheet or blanket that's in body size. And you take this beautiful blanket, you know, sheet and white and clear and wrap yourself in it so no part of your body is not covered by this beautiful sheet. And the sense of kind of being tucked in and safe and cool and refreshed and connected and, you know, soft, you know, it can be so nice. I associated it with a similar idea to when I was a little kid. I would take one of the white sheets that we had for, I guess, the linen, and I would drape it over the dining room table. And I would then, I would cover, you know, we had a small table, and I would cover the drape on the side. And then in certain times of the day, when the sunlight was coming in, there's enough light in the room, I would go inside of this little fort that I built, house, and I would just lay there or sit there and be so content. It would seem so peaceful and clear, and the light was so kind of this muted, clear light coming through the sheets. And it just like, I felt so safe and contented, and it's like nothing, everything was good. The world was good for me in that kind of little space. So I don't know if any of you have that kind of association or something similar to that, where you kind of, oh, this, you know. So anyway, so the simile is that being wrapped in this white, clean, pure white cloth. And this is a simile for being really still, quiet, and everything. There's no discomfort anymore. We're completely connected and involved, and the sense of boundaries of myself and the world are actually not that sharp. Somehow with a soft cotton, it's kind of like, where does my skin begin? Where does the cotton begin? It's kind of like, they're all kind of here in a soft, warm, muted kind of way. The comparable simile for mindfulness is climbing up into a tower or being up on a kind of mountaintop, hilltop, and looking down at the town below. You know, when you're in the middle of the town, you can be in the hustle and bustle of it all, and all the drama can seem so important. But if you get further away, you can kind of have perspective from it. You're not in the hustle and bustle. You're not in the drama of it. You step back and you watch it. When my second year in college, it was the first year I lived kind of in a little apartment around town near the university. I lived with four other guys and in an apartment that had a balcony. And one day, some of my friends were talking in the living room, and I went out in the balcony. I don't know what I was doing. But I closed the sliding glass door. And so I can look back into the living room, and I could see them talking, but I couldn't hear them. And the experience of watching them and, you know, gesturing with their hands and being expressive in their face and quite animated, and not hearing the words and being outside, it was kind of like a special feeling. It's like, wow, I'm not involved in the argument. I'm not involved with what's going on. That's there, I'm here, and I'm in this peaceful place, and they're in this animated conversation. It was kind of a nice kind of feeling of separation. So the idea of sometimes of being removed by being up on a hilltop or up in a tower and being able to watch and not being caught in the drama of life means that you're equanimous. We're not for or against. We're not reactive to what's going on. There's an oversight. It also gives the idea of oversight, looking over, having the big picture. And it's the literal meaning of the word, Pali word for equanimity. The Pali word is upekkha, and it means looking from above, kind of having the big picture of it all. And sometimes you get the big picture so that we're not caught up in the drama of the moment, the particular details. And so the mind has kind of beautiful oversight where the mind stays balanced, stays at ease, stays equanimous, watching what goes on. So those are the eight similes, four for concentration and four for mindfulness. And they don't have to be two separate practices or two separate different events, but rather they represent different perspectives, different aspects of the experience that we're having. That as, from the perspective of concentration, if that's what we're looking for, we feel it in the body, we feel this happiness, this goodness, we feel the affective side, we feel the emotional side of it. So concentration is very subjective, feeling really kind of relishing or centering into the subjective experience of the moment. Mindfulness can happen. This is a different, you know, it's a different side of the coin. Mindfulness is much more objective. So we kind of have this objective stance. We see, oh, that's that. That's what's happening there. Look at that. I'm impatient, and by seeing the impatient rather than being the impatient, we find ourselves free of it. If you're really impatient, you say, well, let's surrender to the impatient. you might feel really uncomfortable. But to step back and get a bird's eye view of the impatience doesn't control you anymore, and it's you have much more equanimity, much more freedom with it. Same thing with feelings of happiness. There are times when it's really nice to kind of drop into the lake of happiness and really feel it. But other times it's good to kind of step back and see it more objectively, so we don't get attached to it, or so we don't find ourselves entangled with it. So we can learn what it's like to have a mind that's free or independent from the experience. So these two sides of meditation, concentration and mindfulness, go hand in hand. And sometimes we emphasize one, sometimes the other. Sometimes your whole psychophysical system, your meditation, will guide you into one more than the other, kind of over months and years, it kind of goes around. But these two work together to help us to have a very settled, connected sense of well-being and equanimity from which the mind is able to see very, 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 very clearly some of the subtlest little movements of attachment that we have. And in seeing the subtlest kind of attachment to self, attachment to pleasure, attachment to identity, to being someone, identification, and the things that are often very hard to see in an ordinary mind because they're so kind of in the background or so kind of at the roots of our operating system, that it's by seeing this that we can uproot those things. We can find that what Buddhism called the final liberation by having the mind so clear. And then this experience of liberation, of really seeing clearly enough to be liberated, also has a simile. And that simile is, again, back to the lake. And now there's a person standing on the edge of the lake, and the lake, it's a mountain lake that's completely still and completely clear. And you look into the lake, and you can see very clearly all the pebbles, all little stones in the lake, and you can see the fish swimming around and the grass that's growing in the lake. You see it with great clearity, but you see it, you know, the sense and not only can you see those things in the water, but you see the clarity. Wow, that's really clear, and you can actually spend time kind of relishing in the clarity. More than actually looking at the particular objects, you can see because of the clarity. So the same thing with the experience of clarity and freedom and independence, liberation that can come with practice, is the sense of the awareness, the mind is free, is clear, stands out in highlight and becomes more interesting even than what we actually see. So then freedom is there. So I hope that gives you some interesting perspectives on these two things, concentration and mindfulness. Maybe different than how you'd usually hear them talked about. We have just about 5 minutes. Anybody would like to question that or ask for clarification or anything you'd like? Or your reactions to hearing all that?
So, is it possible to be stronger at one than the other? So you have a very good concentration, but your mindfulness is not quite as sharp or strong or acute?
Yes, it's possible to be lopsided. And so some people, if they're one is stronger than the other, then sometimes you need to bring them into balance.
And how would you do that? How would you do just a practice that focuses on one rather than the other?
Yeah, different teachers will have different actually approaches. Some teachers are quite happy to have it lopsided. Some teachers say, well, you can't really be too lopsided with mindfulness. Some teachers say you can just that path is you can take it all the way to freedom. The people who focus a lot on concentration practice, some people say that do it as far as you make sense. But then at some point when the mind is very concentrated, then switch over to mindfulness through that way. And some teachers who have a more integrated approach will kind of listen to your experience, how you report it, and say, well, maybe you should try developing some concentration now so there's a stronger capacity for concentration. That's what happened to me at some point, for example, that at one point I had a teacher say, I think you need more concentration and because your mindfulness is quite strong. And so here, why don't you The instruction that was given was the body scan. So it's a concentration practice. And then I had another teacher who told me that my concentration was too strong and said, you know, and I was told, actually, let go of it. Let go of your concentration. So different times of my meditation career, I had different insight.
Thanks.
Kurt, over here. Thank you.
So, I really, what you said was this very different than what my perception of mindfulness is. Very interesting. And so now I'm a little turned around about when you say being in the present moment. I'm not sure if that means that you're more concentrated or if you're mindful, because I'm thinking the present moment, I always thought it was mindful, but if you're looking at a bird's eye view, then yeah, you're not really, I'm not sure.
Yeah, so both concentration and mindfulness involve being in the present moment. And so if it's straight concentration practice, you're more focused, keeping the mind still and quiet on something. So like you're on the breath, you hold the mind kind of quiet and still, just staying with the breath. But you don't actually, you're not really probing the breath. You're not really learning about it or getting the information, seeing the clarity, what's actually experience is like. With mindfulness, you'd also stay with the breath, but you're taking in the experience in some detail. You know, what's that? What are the particular details of breathing in? How is it breathing in different from breathing out? You're kind of like registering the full experience of how it feels and senses and is, and learning, seeing that, recognizing it. Whereas concentration, you're just resting the attention on the breath without any interest particularly of what its experience is like. That makes sense? Some people for mindfulness practice, the focus is not the breathing, it might be the mind itself, what's going on in the mind. So you start looking very carefully at the details of how the mind functions, what it's doing, what it's thinking, what its intentions are, its attitudes, what's going on. And you see it. And that would be more mindfulness. In concentration, the focus is not so much on what's happening exactly, but on settling the mind and allowing yourself to settle into the subjective experiences of calm and well-being that happens as you're focusing and staying present. Does it make sense? And so the mindfulness practice is hopefully, you know, is a great practice, and it's if that's what you primarily do, and you don't, you know, you benefit from that. Maybe you don't need much concentration. One of the ways that we add concentration to mindfulness in our tradition is by going on retreat. So doing a day-long, for example, where we're doing the mindfulness, but we're doing it consistently through the day, that tends to settle and quiet the mind, and so it brings more concentration to be a partner to the mindfulness without even like trying to. Does that make sense? Does that meet your question, or are you still...
I'll have to think about it, but yes. It's giving me something to grab onto, so it makes sense. A little,
great.
Kind of.
Great, thank you. Okay, so I hope you all get wet in your wonderful pool, your lake. Thank you.